returns to Foxwoods Resort Casino June 30th and July 1st. Nightmare on Elm Street fans meet Robert Englund. From Super Troopers 2, Eric Stolhansky. From Sons of Anarchy and Guardians of the Galaxy, Tommy Flanagan. From The Walking Dead and Avengers Infinity War, Ross Marquand. Comic book artists, KidsCon, cosplay contests, Ink Fusion Tattoo Pavilion, and more. All at Comic-Con! A show for the fans, by the fans, at Foxwoods Resort Casino. Buy tickets now at foxwoods.com and comicon.com.
Hello again and welcome to another episode of No Prize Podcast. I am the Professor Bud Young, and with me as always is Johnny the Machine Hughes. How are you, Johnny?
Hey man, how's it going? Sunny day over here in the UK. Woo!
it's warming up over here. We're hitting 80 today and then probably going to be about 100 degrees by Monday. So I'm not looking forward to that.
You have to brag with all the big stuff, don't you? It's like, look at me, I'm in America, it's always super hot or super cold, it's not just nice all the time.
Yeah, it's not just nice all the time, it's always an extreme, it's either hot or cold, it's never any middle ground.
Well, I have got my beer handy, so I am all prepared to take on the Marvel Universe again.
All right, we're gonna review a few books this week, stuff that we liked, stuff that we didn't like. We're going to start today with Domino number 3. And what did you think about this, Johnny?
I have to say that I absolutely didn't know what to expect when Gail Simone jumped ship over to Marvel. Big Gail Simone fan from when she was on Birds of the Prey the first time around. After that, it goes a bit wonky, but by the by. Marvel have a tendency, as I've said in the past, to do female characters really, really well. Mockingbird, Spider-Woman, both favourite books of mine from a couple of years back. So I had high hopes for this. And I've got to say that I've never been much of a Domino fan. She's just not on my radar, mainly because of the whole X-Force and Liefeld thing. So this is like a new character to me. I have to say that I absolutely love Simone's writing. It's full of humour, it's full of angst. There's the whole girl power trip going on. I love seeing Diamond back. I remember when she was in Captain America, God knows when, and thought she was like way cool, even though she looks a bit like Silver Sable, kind of, at times, but with purple hair and sort of thing. I loved Christmas in this. The art was decent for what I expected. A lot of mayhem, a lot of mutants. Some of the black and white stuff was really good. I've got to say, I know that down the line, something's going to happen between the Domino and the Big Bad. And it might turn out to be something quite standard, but with Simone writing this, it is such a fun book. The dialogue's great. The stuff when she realizes, when she has to tell Pork Pies to a team because she doesn't trust one of them, and everybody knows that she's lying, and yet they all go along with it. That is exactly what happens in real life when you have to talk. When you know you're telling a Porky to get out of something, and everybody knows you're telling a Porky, but nobody calls you up on it. It is just so well versed dialogue-wise. So for me, it was a massive flame on. The art is by David Baldion, or my ability to mispronounce names is still going strong, it seems. And Anthony Piper, or Pipper, depending on your point of view.
I was going to say, Johnny, this is going to be your thing. You're going to have to start just mispronouncing even the easiest of names.
Yeah.
Just as a gimmick. That's what it's going to be you.
Yeah. Oh, okay, Bob, I've got it. Okay. So, yeah. So, yeah, this is a massive flame on.
So I'm going to agree with you. I think it's a flame on. I like Gail Simone's writing too, and I was a little, maybe a little trepidatious about her coming over to Marvel, where she had been at DC writing, Secret Six. I was a big fan of Secret Six. I liked her Birds of Prey, and the first couple of issues here, I kind of thought she was trying to do Birds of Prey. Like, I mean, when she introduced Diamondback and, Domino had her little squad there, and I was like, well, these characters have never interacted before. Why are they with Domino now? And,
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, right. So I did kind of like this. I loved the flashback story in this issue, because when you mentioned Domino as being like kind of like a new character to you, she's been around for almost 30 years now, right? And she's still kind of a new character to me too. I mean, other than Liefeld and she was in Cable, in X-Force, but I mean, I don't really remember her being very any kind of a focus on her at all.
I mean, bear in mind the character Domino's had a movie out.
Right? Yeah.
I'm not talking about the Deadpool one. There was one before that. So, she's tried to go through the cross-media route, and it still hasn't helped with, recognition of the character. But, hey, obviously Marvel sees something.
Yeah, this is kind of how I envisioned it going, is that Gail Simone was pretty much wooed over here and said, hey, what character do you want to work on? And of course, Gail being Gail had to kind of pick up someone, that relatively obscure character. But she could do whatever she wants with Domino, and I wouldn't really care. I wouldn't say, hey, you can't do this because it hasn't been done with this character before. So she could pretty much go off the beaten path, and I'll totally buy it. But I do like the mix of characters in this book. I like Domino's kind of personality, that they could tweak it whatever she wants to do. The humor is good. I just really enjoyed this book, and I feel bad because I do kind of feel like with the way Marvel is going these days, this might get like 4 or 5 issues in before it gets canceled. I'm really hoping that this book might be in it for the long haul, and that maybe Gail Simone might have found a good landing place at Marvel and to do with what she wants, and I imagine it's only a matter of time before she's on Captain Marvel trying to do that book justice.
The problem is, you say Gail Simone's got like carte blanche, she can come over and write who she wants on Marvel. Marvel cancelled Mockingbird, which would have been a great fit for Gail. But when you think back, Chelsea Kane was absolutely murdering that book. That book was brilliant.
Yeah.
That book should be the template for female character books. She was
No, I think so too. It's just I think Marvel concentrates on sales before they look at anything else. They don't let a book find a readership before it's canceled. They did the same thing with Iceman, right? Because Iceman just was announced as being relaunched in October, and they canceled that after 6 issues.
Did you see my tweet about that?
I didn't. What did it say?
So someone posted, I think it was probably Comic Crusader, said, because you demanded it, Marvel are bringing back Iceman. And I was like, I demanded a Mockingbird. What are you going to do now, Marvel? What are you going to do? And they haven't put it on the schedule yet. So,
they might, just do 5,000 more tweets and maybe you'll get it.
But hey, I've got game on this. I've got history. This is how it works. I've been on, when I was on TDC, I was saying things about Birds of Prey and the Batwoman book and about how bad they were. Both of those have been cancelled. I was saying how bad the Batgirl costume was, and that's been revamped. Oh. So see, DC, listen to me. Marvel.
Oh, my God.
Is it my accent? Come on.
You're gonna be writing things now? You're going to be like, don't you know who I am? I can get your book cancelled like that.
Yeah. My friend Bob, he knows who I am.
All it takes is one well-placed tweet.
Yeah, I know I'd like to place the tweet.
Yesterday's news. Hey, you know what? I really like the addition of Shang-Chi at the end of this book too. So hey, you know.
Oh yeah, that, and, I was.
And how she tripped not, over herself and everything. I loved it.
I've got right, okay. So help me out, because I've said it's a new character. She sees Shang-Chi, and I've got to say, I'm absolutely over the moon with Shang-Chi. I think that was great. Who's Domino in a relationship with?
She was romantically linked to Cable, right? And then in the last in the last series when she was in the X-Men, she was linked to Colossus. But, like, she was banging Colossus.
But she says in the book, I'm kind of seeing someone, but I'm open to try new things. As if to imply that she's currently seeing someone. And it can't be Colossus, because Colossus is getting hitched.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Oh, so it could be.
We're back
could
to our XX's book again, aren't we?
Yeah, the XX-Men. Yeah, it could be anybody, really, right? I'm sure there's a long list of suspects, because I never really got the feeling that Domino was a one-man guy anyway, a one-man girl.
She might be a one-girl girl. Who knows nowadays?
You never know. They might do that just because they can.
Why not?
So bottom line, Domino is a huge thumbs up for me too. Flame on. Flame on for Domino. Let's see, what are we moving on to next? Let's stay in the mutant universe right now and go over to X-Men Blue number 29. And okay. This is a struggling series written by Cullen Bunn and art with in this issue by Nathan Stockman, and honestly, this book is coming out every other week, so bi-weekly X-Men Blue. I don't know why, and you know what? When I first started reading this issue, so it's starting out with Jimmy Hudson, who is the Ultimate Universe's Wolverine, who is now on the X-Men Blue. So the X-Men Blue is kind of alternate universe type characters. I had to get in like two pages in before I was like, oh yeah, that's who this guy is. Because I mean, honestly, this book is running with two different X-Men teams. So it's X-Men Blue and X-Men. I don't know what's another color for blue.
Tangerine? Yeah, no? Sure. Turquoise?
X-Men Navy. I don't know. But this book just was, you know, it wasn't confusing. It was just an almost like an epilogue on this stupid poison crossover with Venom, where Jimmy Hudson is still infected with the poison symbiote and ends up getting into a fight with the returning primary X-Men Blue team. And you know, it's a big, you know, we fight each other, and then at the end of the issue, it's, you know, I'm fixed and welcome back to the team. So it was, it's a book really that didn't go anywhere. It was a little confusing, and it was kind of, I mean, I hated the poison storyline anyway. So I don't know if they were forced to do an epilogue to take care of whatever's going on with this character, but. It didn't get me at all. I was just glad when it was over. I thought it was. I just thought it was clunky, and I expect more from my X-Men books. This just wasn't doing anything for me.
Okay.
This is a clobbering time for me.
I've got to be honest. I like Cullen Bunn. I think some of his stuff that I've read in the past, predominantly independent stuff, has been bang on. I don't know what the difference is between reading a Cullen Bunn book when we're talking about stuff like The Shadow and Dark Ark, and then we come to X-Men Blue, and there seems to be, is it the weight of the X-Universe that kind of pulls people down? Is it the fact that he's being given, let's be honest, these characters, does anybody really care about the out-of-time X-Men? Really? Does anybody give a rat's ass?
now that Bendis is gone, no.
So it's like, Gene's back in the rule book. And yet we've got Gene here. We've got a Cyclops who's running around trying to be the old Cyclops before he went bananas. Angel's got some firewing contraption going on. It's like they've tried to recapture something. I'm not quite sure if Marvel have actually thought this through. Back when this team was X-Factor, way back when it was Louise and Walt Simonson on the book, there was a clear guide of what these characters were about and what they were doing. This, it just seems to be one mishap after another. And I've got to be honest, I'm not feeling it. I am totally disappointed by X-Men Blue. I want to love it because I like Bunn's writing on other books. And some of the dialogue fits X-Men, you know. The whole James and Jean thing, you know, it's a parallel to how Wolverine feels about Jean. And it's, you know, it's inevitable that they're going to have the same sort of love triangle between him, Jean, and Scott, the way that the original Wolverine, Scott and Jean, had. But it doesn't offer anything new. And for characters that are potentially just run out of time, ironically, it's a clobber. It's a clobber. Not because the art's particularly bad or because the writing's particularly bad. It's just I don't care about the characters.
Well, I wonder from where this book went wrong from like issue one, because issue one when it was back to being the original time displaced X-Men with the reveal at the end of the issue that Magneto was leading them, and that was like, oh, okay, I'm in, because it's the original X-Men but led by Magneto. So let's see where this could go, and then it's just kind of morphed into I don't even know what. I mean, you have Magneto is leading this other team with Dakin and Polaris and a bunch of other X-Men that I don't even really know too much about. Armor and Glob, or I don't know some throwaway X-Men, and then these characters are off in space doing God knows what. This book has kind of lost its way, and
that's where it was. That's when they went. You know, when Magneto was in charge, it was fine. And then they were trying to get back to their own time, and then time skipping everywhere and so on and so forth.
Yep.
That's all well and good, but sooner or later, you've got to get back to home or whatnot. But then they didn't. They ended up back in where they started from. And you're like, if you want to go back and do X-Men when they were kids, fine. Go back, do X-Men when they were kids. But everything has to change. Magneto has to be the bad guy. He doesn't have to have the motivations that we know about. It has to be simpler times. It has to be Sentinels. It has to be something along those lines. This, I don't know. It's trying to mix current storytelling methods and current angst-driven stories, I guess, with characters that are just... We've seen this already. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I know that there's a big crossover starting next month, right? With all these different X teams, and I'm sure is going to lead into another reboot of the X-Men universe. So I'm hoping that that they get rid of this little sub team, and maybe have some different X-Men or newer X-Men. Better ideas, but this book is just a huge clobber for me. And you're right, I like Colin Bunn too, but it seems to me like he's listening to either listening to an editor that's telling him what to do. You know, you have to have this crossover with Venom. and I don't think this book is going to recover from that crossover. Sorry to say.
No, there's no reason why that even has to occur. And I mean the end bit where Dakin just turns up and you're like, what? Where? Who? And it's kind of like, what?
I mean, it's going to be the two different X-Men teams that we've been reading about for the last 6 months fighting each other, starting next issue. And I'm so not waiting for that. It's like, it can't come late enough for me. I can wait more than 2 weeks. So just hold off on that, Marvel. All right, so okay,
we're clobbering that, aren't we?
Oh yeah, we're clobbering the hell out of
it. Are we clobbering that like a Doctor Doom LMD? Is that how we're clobbering it?
Oh yeah, it's clobbering time. that's that punch from last week where he punched the Galactus Doom. Clobbering time.
Let's take him down the Yancey Street.
Oh yeah.
Give him a kick.
All right, so let's jump over to our next book that we're going to review is number one. The number one this week is Thor. Number one, the fresh start's over, baby. Time for the fresher start, and we're getting Thor number one. Retro numbering is over, and we're getting a new number one here. And as far as the number ones have been going, what do you think?
I'm speechless. I've got to be honest. I don't understand. I mean, I do understand. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a complete moron. Companies put number ones out because all the people who think that buying a comic book is going to get you through college is going to buy, they're going to buy number one. Just as a matter of economics, comic book shops order lots of number ones, but they don't order lots of number twos. So if you want to make some money on a popular book, the second issue is the one. Just saying. I don't see what the point is. I mean, I read the Avengers stuff when it was like, oh, the big three are back again. I'm like, but then Thor's there, but then he hasn't got an arm, and then he's now got an arm, and then he's got a hammer, and then, my head starts hurting, man. I think the Marvel continuity is just absolutely... pins, eyes, and the insertion of, just... My head hurts. But specifically Thor number one, I think the writing is very, very... Thor-like for about three quarters of it. Does anybody else hear Chris Hemsworth's voice when they read a Thor book? Or is that just me?
It's just you.
Really?
Well, it's not. Well, present company. I don't hear Chris Hemsworth when I read Thor.
Who do you hear?
The Thor voice that's in my head, that's been in my head for the last 35 years.
Oh, go on then. Let's hear this. How's it going?
It's a very... sorry, I'm getting to my first word bubble of dialogue in this book. Tis indeed most unfortunate. Unfortunate for all of you. Yeah, see?
Also, your Thor's Scottish, right? Got it.
Yeah, well, you gotta read, you gotta kind of gotta give him an accent, but.
I have lived for 150 years and killed twice as many men. And yet, yeah. I still cannot think to put my axe across the glove, because I'm a moron. Loki, my brother.
So, that's
my Hemsworth impression. Please don't sue me, Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, well, you continue with this, and I'll jump in. But yeah, as far as well, okay, I forgot what I was going to say. So you can go ahead, and I'll jump in.
Right, so the writing on this is three quarters fantastic. It reads like Ragnarok. It reads as funny as Ragnarok, the movie, was trying to be, but failed massively. It's kind of like just the way it is. It's just Thor being a little bit too clever for his own good. The thing with the hammer, so everyone's banging on about the hammer. I love the fact that they've got the Juggernaut's name wrong, and he's kind of like, you know me well, Kane Marco, and all that. It's just whatever. And he's like, Juggernaut, aren't you supposed to be a girl? And all that sort of stuff. It just worked. Right up until the point Loki turned up. And then it went a bit Pete Tong for me. The art, it's a chaotic book because there's shed loads of stuff going on, but the art was not my cup of tea in any shape, way or form. I don't know if it was too, it tries to be epic in some ways when you see the panels of how big Juggernaut is versus how Thor is, it tries to give you that sense of wonder. But to me, it just made me think, so maybe I can draw comic books as well. And anyone who's seen my art probably thinks I can't. It's fine. But no, Jason Aaron, he's trying to go for the humour bit. But the hammer thing was fine. A lot of the jokes were fine. For me, I'm not going to say it's a massive flame on. It's kind of like, I'm going to say it's an Invisible Woman. There you go. There's enough to hold my interest, but it's something that better... the art's the thing that kind of drives me to distraction on this.
I don't know if I'm going to totally, entirely agree with you on everything, but, you know, when you said, what's the point? I mean, it's not like we had a big, huge creative team shift here. Jason Aaron has been writing Thor for legitimately years, and he doesn't look like he's going to slow down anytime soon. So, I mean, it's not – this book continues directly from last issue of Thor. So you get a new number one, but now Odinson is the main character in this book. Jane Foster is she's in this book, but I mean, she's not Thor anymore. So, for that reason alone, I can see why we would want to give this book a new number one. Okay. So you're changing main characters. Thor Odinson is now your main character. So great. New number one. I agree with that. Now, Mike Del Mundo, I really enjoyed his work on Avengers last year, and I loved, you know, his kind of painted artwork style. And you're right as far as comedy goes, because they did kind of throw some comedic bits in there. And you know the reason that they threw the comedic bits in there was because Ragnarok was so critically acclaimed for being funny. And so now they think Thor
Stop.
Critically acclaimed, not Johnny acclaimed, but critically acclaimed.
Who critically acclaimed? That is being funny.
A lot of the reviews that I read applauded it for being absolutely hilarious. I didn't think it was hilarious. I mean, I thought there were some funny moments in it, but it was definitely made to be a comedy along the lines of Guardians of the Galaxy.
No way. Obviously, I wasn't as stoned as the next person, then. That's all I'm saying.
Well,
because first Guardians was genuinely funny. The first Thor was genuinely funny because it was unintentional humor.
Right. Ragnarok was done for slapstick comedy, and it was a buddy movie, Hulk Thor buddy movie. I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
I'm going to stop.
The success of Ragnarok, success of Ragnarok, I think led to them saying, okay, we need to lighten up Thor a little bit and make him a little funny. Write him like you might write Spider-Man a little bit, you know? Because there were a couple of lines in there that I was like, you know, it's kind of done. Like when he said, like, I'm the worst Thor ever or something like that, mm-hmm. You know? But the art kind of tried to be funny with it. It was almost cartoony at some points. Like, there's this one point where the Juggernaut was right. The page before Juggernaut appears, you hear the thoom sound effects. And then one of the thooms in one of the panels is like right over Thor's eyes, like wide, surprising eyes. And he says, ah, hell. And it's H-E-L. I thought that was kind of, you know, kind of funny, but then the other things when Juggernaut and Thor get into a fight, and every time Juggernaut hits Thor, it's like he's literally, there are stars everywhere. Like, you know, okay, Thor's seeing stars. That to me was a little cartoony. So other than that, you know, I liked it. You know, the hammer broke. That was kind of going with the storyline because I actually liked the visual with all the other hammers falling out of the ground, falling out of the sky. That was pretty cool. So, you know, but then of course when Thor punches Juggernaut and you get like glow in the dark stars and you get a full visual of Juggernaut's tooth flying at you, I thought, you know, I'm like, okay, this is, you know, I'm supposed to be thinking kind of like this is a cartoon right now. And I don't really want to think of Thor like that. I kind of want a classic action, Lord of the Rings type saga. And this is kind of really kind of played more for laughs. Not that they were all terrible jokes. Some of them were pretty good. But overall, I don't know. I think it didn't work. And I'd clobber the first issue, but with the thought of next issue kind of being better.
Well, that's an Invisible Woman then.
Yeah. Well. Maybe it's an Invisible Woman. Yeah. I liked Loki in it. Loki was good, but I didn't like the fact that Submariner was on it for a page and a half. I don't know what he was doing in there.
Right. So we need another. I tell you what. How about this? It's not a clobber, because there are good bits you like. It's not a flame on, because there's bits you don't like. It's not an Invisible Woman, because you're kind of not sitting on the fence. What you're trying to do is stretch it out to the second.
I see what you did there. Yeah. You like that?
So you're on a Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah, there we go. I'm to Mr. Fantastic because it's a bit of a stretch. Yeah. All right. So there we go. We made up a new... I liked it. I didn't like it, but for the most part, I think it was deserving of a new issue one. I liked Jason Aaron's writing. He has been writing Thor forever. I don't see any reason why you would want to have someone else writing the book at this point. But of course, Del Mundo's art, a little off-putting. So we didn't talk about the second story. Did you like the second story?
I stopped at the first story. I was like, right, next, move on.
You didn't read the second story?
I didn't read the second story. I did not read the second story. The
second story was actually better than the first one.
Really?
Yeah, I can't believe you didn't read it.
Hang on.
But it was Future Thor, because that was, if you remember back.
That's right.
Yeah, if you remember back then, years ago, they did the Future Thor story at the end of the universe with, his three daughters and stuff.
Yeah, I'm not a Thor future kind of guy. Although the art looks a lot better. Oh, there's a hammer.
Yeah.
What's a hammer? He's in the future. That must mean he must be worthy again at some point.
Yeah.
There's no metal arm. Oh, he's no metal arm. So do you know what that means? Oh, maybe it is. Maybe it is a bit metal.
Just take a look at the first page. The last page. Take a look at the last page and kind of say, hey, what the heck is this?
What the?
So, yeah. They look a little like Wolverine with his glowing claws in the Phoenix Force, to be continued in Thor number 5. So I actually kind of like that it was like a, hey, here's a little tease for the second story arc. I actually kind of like that.
I like the art a lot better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the art's really good.
That's the sort of stuff you want to see on a Thor book, isn't it? That style of art.
Yeah.
You just flip through. Who was on the art for the second story? Just check. Oh, Space Dolphins. Cool.
Yeah.
It's Lobo.
There's a Lobo's off somewhere. Actually, there was a space shark, wasn't it?
Oh. Fine.
It's more dangerous. The artist for the second story is Christian Ward.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So kudos to Christian, because that was from some strong work.
I really like the art in the second story. I've got to say, because you've mentioned about the future thought and stuff like that, when I read the previously page... I was kind of like, it mentions about like the future. I was like, what's going on here? And then it goes back to where we were. I was kind of like a little bit confused, but I'm still okay. I'm still okay with an Invisible Woman for me.
Yeah. And also we can go with the stretch for me, since we made up a new thing all fall. So that was, that was good. So let's jump into the last review that we have lined up here, and it's the second issue of the relaunch of Venom. And I picked this book this week because I think number one came out when the off week when we weren't recording, because I kind of wanted to start hitting on all these new relaunches. And this is kind of relaunched with a new direction and kind of a new feel to the book, whereas the last iteration of Venom was kind of, you know, kind of trying to be more of a superhero type book. This book is definitely kind of taking more of a dark turn and trying to be more of like a dark horror type book, which, you know, I didn't know if I was going to enjoy it after I read the first issue, but reading the second issue, I thought it was really, really good, and the storyline is kind of really, really kind of taken off, because it was not as much about Venom as it was more about this second character, Rex, that they introduced, because the whole premise of this story is that Venom, or the symbiote that that Venom has. Was not the first time the symbiotes have ever been to Earth, which I thought was a new, fresh take. So anyway, apparently the government had gotten a hold of a symbiote from, you know, I don't know where, like, I think Vietnam, I think, was where this Rex, the storyline was set, And they used the Venom symbiote on some soldiers, and Rex was one of the main soldiers they used the symbiote on, and it was only a couple of drops of it, so I don't think he was as powerful as Venom is, but it was a pretty good backstory on this guy's origin. But it looks like the symbiote is having kind of like a hard time dealing with this other new symbiote, and it looks like they kind of are going up against each other. The symbiote starts talking in a different language that Eddie's never heard before, and so it seems to me like a little bit of a mystery, a little bit of kind of like a what's going on here. But I actually like it, because it's not, you know, we've been getting venomized for the last couple of years now, where they're all the biggest thing that they can do is kind of give the symbiote to another character and show what, you know, you can have a Wolverine Venom and a Spider-Man Venom, and this one is just, it's straight up Eddie Brock in the suit trying to deal with this new twist to his origin story. I thought it worked. I really liked it. I think this is kind of going on a run of success that Donny Cates has had since coming over to Marvel. I'm all in. I can't wait for the next issue, and I really didn't have very high expectations going in. So, you know, good on Donny Cates and Ryan Stegman as penciler. I really liked it. The art. It's nice and it's dark, like it should be for the story. And I enjoyed the hell out of it. And I know I think I made you read this. I made you read it, Johnny.
just you wait. I will get my own back. Right. So, I agree that some of Donny Cates' recent stuff has been absolutely top-notch. But here's the thing. I genuinely do not give a rat's ass about Eddie Brock. I didn't like him as Venom when he was the original bad guy, because you're not supposed to like him. There's nothing redeeming about him. He was an anti-hero in the 90s because that was what was cool. He is the Marvel Universe's version of the Borg. He has been demystified. He has been de-threatened. He's been pulled from pillar to post. He carries no weight anymore in any shape, way, or form. So... That being said, this book was sucky. No, that being said, it's exactly as I said it. I don't care. I genuinely don't care. Yeah, it's a nice idea that, you know, the other symbionts got to the planet before the alien suit did. You know, I understand that. Of course, nobody mentions that the Beyonder didn't send anybody else from that first world and secret wars from there, where the alien suit comes from, into Earth at all, in any shape, way, or form. Stegman's art was a lot darker than I expected, than I'd seen previously. That might have something to do with the inks and the colours, which the inks seem a little bit heavy in places, which I don't mind because it does tailor to the darkness in the story. What I do kind of roll my eyes at is the big bad in this book reminds me very much of the Hydro Man Sandman mashup way back when in Amazing Spider-Man. And you think we've gone like 30 years and are we still getting the monster comic books? So I'm kind of, for me, it is a clobber. I am really sorry. It is a clobber. Hey. Not even an Invisible Woman, not even a stretch. In fact, this is so not a stretch. This is Reed Richards without his powers using those stupid mechanical stretchy arms that he used to have. That's how much of an unstretch this is. Clobber.
Well, I'm going to flame on this book because I think it's taken Venom in a direction that I think he deserves to go in. And
cancel.
What was that?
Cancelled. He's taken this book takes Venom to a place he wants to be. Ostracized from the Marvel Universe. Yes.
Yes. Relaunched in 6 months, just like everybody else. I'm digging where Donny Cates is going with this, and I'm in for the storyline. So I think it's a flame on. So go check this out, unless you're like Johnny and just think Venom is really kind of never even had a welcome, let alone worn it out. So
go and check it out and see which one of us you agree with and email the show to let us know. And then we'll give you a name check later on.
Yeah. Yeah. Do that. And you know, if a Venom dragon doesn't float your boat, then I don't know. You have no pulse.
Oh, in that case, I'm dead. Great.
All right. So, what else is going on, Johnny? Did you happen to read the new story going on about Stan Lee this week?
Yes, I did. I read something, but I've got to be honest with Stan Lee. I take everything with a pinch of salt.
In fact, I take it with a...
And we said this before, because I know you're really like a proponent of protecting the guy, and that's... I guess deep down I am too. My issue is, what's truth and what's fiction? I don't know. I can't differentiate between the two. And I'm not sure that people who are posting on his account or sending his Facebook and all that sort of stuff, I'm not sure if they're the real ones, if they're not the real ones, if it's this, if it's that. What do you do, man?
I don't know. Just the latest info about Kia Morgan being arrested for filing a false police report, where last week that the police had been at his house because there were armed gunmen that were yelling at Stan, saying that they want their money. Coming to find out that the people that were at his house actually were detectives that were questioning Stan about stuff, but then Kia Morgan kind of called the police because he didn't know who these people were. They're arrested for filing a false police report, and now Stan Lee has filed a restraining order against Kia Morgan, which to me was a long time coming because this is the guy that has released a lot of these stories that had been coming out about all the other people that are around that were around him, plus called the lawyer that he had. The lawyer that the story that came out from the Hollywood Reporter last month or a month and a half ago, where where there was a lot of bad press about the lawyer, like the lawyer and the restraining orders that had gone out there, was actually the lawyer that Stan Lee actually came out and actually said, I don't know who this lawyer guy is, is actually the one that filed the restraining order against Kia Morgan. So
this is what I'm talking about. It's like
it is mass confusion for real.
Left hand doesn't know what right hand is doing, and left hand doesn't even know it's the left hand. Right. That's how bonkers it is. I saw something on social media as well that I'm going to say and people are going to hate me for, But Stan Lee was rewarded this week, wasn't he, for... Was he in the Sci-Fi Hall of Fame with someone else?
Yes, yes. He was.
And I'm like, Are you having my eyes? Whether no matter who you believe, whether it was Stan Lee that wrote all the Marvel Universe, or if it was Jack Kirby, I tend to think it probably wasn't Jack Kirby because his writing historically isn't the best, to say the least. The truth of the matter is, it's a mix of the pair. So regardless if it was 50-50, 60-40, 40-60, whichever way it went, you can't recognize Stan Lee without recognizing Jack Kirby.
Right.
You can't.
Yeah.
Regardless of where you think who did what and who did this, comic books, at the very least, are a visual medium. Yeah. If you want to write a comic book without pictures, it's called a novel.
Right. Yeah.
So for Stan Lee to get awarded, and he's done some great stuff, and he did create the Marvel Universe. I've got that. But he did it with people like Jack Kirby. He did it with people like Steve Ditko, John Romita Jr.
Yeah.
John Romita Sr. People who then went and took the original ideas and then moved it forward. You know, people like John Byrne on Fantastic Four, people like Chris Claremont on X-Men, people like that who, Roger Stern over on Avengers, Mark Gruenwald, all those people took that initial nugget of a story and characters and moved it forward. Hell, even Todd McFarlane and Eric Larson, if you want to break bones over it. But, you know, it's kind of like Stan Lee gets all the recognition.
Well, I think, you know, it's because he's the most famous person left from those days. There's hardly anybody left, you know. So he's getting recognized for his accomplishments, and there were many. I mean, that is his name that Stan Lee presents, you know, on everything. I don't think that we should belittle his contributions to comics in general, but I do see, you know, not, you don't want to put him ahead of Kirby. I mean, it's got to be Lee and Kirby and then pretty much everybody else. I agree with you there. You can't put Stan Lee into a Sci-Fi Hall of Fame without putting Jack Kirby right there next to him. I agree with you there.
Cool. I agree. I agree. I agree with me also. Well done.
Well done.
Go on. Carry on. Yeah.
Have you checked out the Cloak and Dagger series yet?
I don't think I've got it yet over here in the UK. But what I will say to my good friend, our good friend, Bamfing Bob. I will say that this week saw the release of Black Panther on DVD and Blu-ray.
Oh.
And guess what?
You watched it.
Hell no.
No, you haven't watched it. You haven't watched it yet.
I'm not quite sure. I don't understand this word yet.
Oh, so you're still... So now you're just not going to watch it. Just
No. It's kind of one of these things, I think, where the moment has passed me by. And I think, I know Bantham was saying about how I appreciate the next movie down the line, which was Avengers Infinity War, if I watched Black Panther, because I'd understand more. But actually, I don't think I want to understand Infinity War that much more either, because that didn't do it for me. Although I really wanted it to. I wanted it to be fantastic. I wanted it to blow my socks off. And my socks remain firmly on my feet.
So. You're gonna wait for part four.
Oh, have you heard the rumors about part four?
I saw leaked concept art for the Hulk and others. So yeah, I mean, if that's the rumors, then yeah. Unless you have something juicier.
Well, I heard. One second. Excuse me. I heard that the way out of the predicament that they're in is going to be in Ant and the Wasp. It's going to be about the ghost character who can then check dimensions and stuff, and ooh, they're going to get all people, different people. I tell you what, if it comes out that it's an alternative dimension thing, I will absolutely just walk out halfway through. If that's the best you can come up with, that is, for you oldies out there, that is Bobby Ewing in the shower. It was all a dream.
Yeah, that would be awful, and especially that reference, because no one knows who Bobby Ewing is.
Really?
Nobody anymore. That was a Dallas reference from all of you 80s people. That was, you know.
I'm wasted. I'm wasted on this pod. This is supposed to be about pop culture. I give you a pop culture. Admittedly, it was pop culture 30, 40 years ago. But hey, it's still all good, right?
You know, pop culture is pop culture, especially if it's Silver Age pop culture, Bronze Age. would Dallas fall squarely in the Bronze Age of television?
I mean, it would probably fall within the crap age of television.
That was Dallas was on like right after Magnum PI.
But then it spawned Dynasty and all that sort of crap. So cool. That's it. Before we go down that lane, let's call it a night and go there. I'm going to go and watch the World Cup, which is a soccer event where it's called the World because it includes other countries other than America, you know, which are actually in this, other than the World Series of Baseball, which only has two American teams.
Now, Johnny, I am cultured. You feel free to call it football, not soccer. We can educate the world.
I don't mind calling it soccer. Football to me is all. As people should know, I'm a huge NFL fan. Go Finns.
You're not going to catch me rooting for them.
Well, that's fine. I didn't root for your lot against the Eagles, and I hate the Eagles. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But at least, you know, at least we won as much as you did last year, which was nothing.
We'll see. Spring. Hope springs eternal.
Hope springs training camp.
All right. So tune in a couple of weeks. We'll be checking out the next offerings that Marvel has. I'm sure there'll be a couple more number ones in there. And we will ponder the reasons why in our next episode.
I guarantee there'll be some number twos in there as well.
Oh, we can clobber the number twos there, Johnny. All right. Have a good week. We'll talk to you next time.
This is an Undercover Capes production.